morning, everybody. It's January 10th, 2020, and it's 9 a.m., and we're here at the public meeting room in the Story County Administration Building for a budget work session for FY21 for the Story County Sheriff's Office. Several people in attendance, and I'm going to ask at least people at the table here and the presenters at the table to give their names for the record. So I'm Linda Merkin, Chair of the Story County Board of Supervisors.
Sandra King, Director of External Affairs and County Services.
Laura Solson, Board of Supervisors.
Lisa Hudson, Board of Supervisors.
Alyssa Wignall, Director of Internal Operations and Human Resources.
Lucy Martin, Auditor.
Johnson Torsell, Office Manager, Sheriff's Office.
Paul Fitzgerald, Story County Sheriff, along accompanied by members of my command staff sitting behind us.
Nick Money, Chief Deputy, Story County Sheriff's Office.
Okay. Do you want to everybody's names in?
That'd be fine.
Okay, folks, if you could, I have to ask you to come to the microphone and state your name for the record, so we know you're here.
It's over here.
I'm sorry.
Mike Anderson,
Assistant
Deal Administrator.
Thank you.
John Edson, Deal Administrator, not Sheriff. Gary Batchel, Support Service.
Thank you, everybody. We appreciate it. I'm going to say just a couple words and then give the other supervisors an opportunity to say anything we want to, and then we'll hand over their presentation. As we all know, the Board of Supervisors is primarily responsible for funding mandated services. We also fund numerous other important services. One purpose of this budget session is that we obtain information to help us prioritize our use of taxpayer funds, and it's your opportunity to explain the value to Story County residents of the items in the budget request so we can in turn share that with our constituents. Specifically, we're going to ask that you address your projected revenues and expenditures and explain any differences in trends that you've seen to justify any budget changes. There's a couple of directions that I think you remember from the operating or from the budget instructions that Assistant Auditor Markley sent out with along the Board of Supervisors. One was continue to lower expenses and streamline operations whenever possible, not increasing operating expenses unless justified by current expenditures or known increases that you know will happen next year, and attempting to offset with reductions elsewhere whenever possible, if not to provide justification. I believe this board has done a good job in recent years of not leaving departments hanging when there are unanticipated expenditures that come up during the fiscal year. That's why we've asked that all the expenses, you know, be things that are known or anticipated with justification. And I think that's a way that we do responsible budgeting. It's an agreement, you know, that you understand that you don't need to, you know, you don't need to put things in there just in case, because we are willing to look at justifications during the year. If there's something came up that we couldn't anticipate this, but we have this expense. So, and I believe I can speak for the entire board that our desire to continue doing business that way. The other thing is in personnel, new staff will likely not be considered unless there's clearly a demonstrable need and a cost-benefit analysis which produces a positive benefit for the county. And we do have information from you about your position request, and we'll want to go over that and the justifications. We appreciate the information you've given us. And it helps us better prioritize and explain to the taxpayers how we're prioritizing when there are additional positions that are recommended. Assistant Auditor Markley is not here today. I think everybody heard she's ill, so Auditor Lucy Martin is taking her place.
Oh, I can never take her place. I'm
don't
in.
Tell her I said that.
Wash your hands. She's got a really bad stomach bug. So
Auditor Lucy Martin is filling in for us. Thank you. We appreciate that. What we would like to do, we want to get through this so we don't have to schedule a call back. So we're going to try to be as efficient in our questions as possible. And I think if we're all efficient in questions, responses, you know, whatever, that we can get through it in this morning's time. If not, there would be a call back scheduled. But what we would like to do is, as you walk us through the budget, if we have a question at any point, we'd like to ask the question then rather than hold till the end of the presentation. Because you have a pretty lengthy budget, and by the time we get to the end, it might be hard to remember all the questions or have them written down. Is that all right?
I'll follow whatever lead you'd like us to take.
Okay. We like that. Good. Then I will ask if either of the other supervisors have anything they want to.
I'm just going to say thank you for being here this morning and look forward to learning more detail about your proposal.
So another thing that is at the beginning of each budget is that when we met with Lisa Markley on Monday morning and we got the first fiscal year projections from her, taking into account the same tax asking as last year. So in other words, if we weren't to take any more taxes from the taxpayers, there is a gap between the request and the amount that we're showing as far as revenue goes. That is $1.7 million on tax asking. Overall, if you take everything into account, it's $3 million, but that does not count maybe funds that would be pulled from some other funds types of accounts. Just want you to know that we've got about 45 here and about 48 there. Okay, thanks.
Okay. Would you like to start? And start revenues first, then expenditures, then new positions. Is that all right?
That's fine.
Okay.
You have asked for four new positions within the sheriff's office. And before I start, I'd like to mention that we realize in the sheriff's office and as a sheriff that we can only spend what the Board of Supervisors budgets and appropriates. So, appreciate having the opportunity to come and work with the board here. This is my 28th budget work session in front of the board, so I've seen various different styles come and go. And as we come into the style that you had talked about, mentioned about throughout the year when unincurred expenses come up, that the board has always been willing to work with us. And that has certainly been the case the last 3 or 4 years as we started to migrate to this transition that we have now. And I found that, I was hesitant at first, but I found it a very workable solution. The budget that we present to you today, by looking at the guidelines that were sent out, we know that it's a heavy lift from what was asked for. But I think that you'll see the need as we talk through this. And also, you'll see the way I present my budget to the board, you'll see things that my department has asked for and we have taken out. And those things we've taken out, it's not only to show what we have taken out, but it also gives the Board of Supervisors an indication that in future years, at some time, these items may have to be met. So anyway, with that, we will start with the budget proposal for the four positions. One is the sergeant.
Start with the revenues?
Pardon me?
Sheriff, can we start with the revenues?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Revenues, and expenditures, then new positions.
Okay.
It's the order the budget book is in, so it helps. You have to go back and forth. You're always going to end up on the wrong line, is what I figured.
Does anybody have any cheaters?
Okay.
I love my new costume.
Well,
you do. That's okay. Well, the revenues we do in our office, the chief deputy is the one who champions the revenue portion of the budget and goes through this. Nick, are you ready to walk through this a little bit?
Yeah, I can just kind of go through, and from what Connie and I identified, there's usually do a 3-year average. We re-estimate the current fiscal year, and then we project for fiscal year 21. And so as we go through those, we identify any large gaps, any significant increases, decreases that may bring questions. And so I'll kind of go down and highlight those line items for you, and then we can circle back within that if you have specific questions on specific line items. So starting with the let me back up here for my first page. Starting under the 8490 line item, which is listed as the general basic 8490.05, that is the 3-year average is significantly higher. For that, we have medical reimbursement from that line item that typically came into that line item as revenue. That has been transferred to the 302.99 line item. So there's a large chunk that normally was factored in. That average has been taken out.
It was transferred to where?
302.99.
Countywide budget.
Okay. So that's why it's only 500 and your 3-year average is 92.15.
Correct.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
Yep.
Would you mind going to the one right above that? Jail inmate commissary interest on investments. It's
sure.
6,005. You've got $700, and it's a small amount, I know, but you've got $700 for the first 6 months of the year. And I'm wondering if 1,500 might be a more reasonable estimate there.
I think you looked more at kind of a 3-year average, right?
Yeah,
but the trend is going up.
Are you talking about the re-estimated for FY20, Linda?
No, I'm talking about the re-estimated. We've got 705 year to date. Doubling that is 1,400, and the budget is 1,000. And I know there's 3-year average, but I also look at trends.
I think we re-estimated that at 1,200 from what I show here. So we're kind of split where you're thinking as well. So we did re-estimate that a little bit more.
Okay.
So that's where we're at with the end for, of 2020.
For 20, but for 21, you took it back down.
To 1,000.
To
1,000.
Yeah, and the reasoning for that is just, I know it's trending up, but just looking at that 3-year average.
Okay.
We're just under 1,000.
Okay.
That's the number we felt comfortable with.
Okay.
Revenues, we do try to get that lower. And then revenues, or expenditures, we try to get that higher, so we aren't getting ourselves in a bind.
Okay. I'm sorry, go ahead. And
no problem. So moving on down to the general basic 2502 line item, that's our care of prisoners. We have a high 3-year average on that. A few years back, Dallas County, as you know, is still in the process of building their new jail and sheriff's office facility. And that has not been completed yet. But in that past 3-year average, we had a huge influx of inmates from them for extended periods of time. So that really boosted up that 3-year average, made it high. That has since dropped. They are nearing completion of that facility. And so those numbers are down. However, we still have Polk County inmates that we bring in, some federal inmates that we bring in. So. And there's revenue, and there's potential for Dallas County also to move some inmates up as they need it until they get situated in the new facility.
In your narrative, you said we do not see the inmate numbers diminishing in FY21. So I was kind of surprised that you weren't budgeting something more like your 3-year average of 310 or what you might get this year at 300.
That's a good question. So for the current year, we don't see it decreasing a whole lot from the current year. Dallas County has dropped off. It's been most of this year, their numbers have been down for us. So we project next year is going to be consistent with what we see with the FY20 year.
Then it's going to be more like 300,000 rather than 250. Because you got 149 for 6 months. Received year to date is July through December, and I see 149,460.
But we're not only Dallas County.
That's what he's saying. But you are right. This 149,000 reflects some Dallas County still, but you won't be. You look at Dallas County really going down from January here on.
That's
and going down.
And they've been down. Okay.
So were you thinking you were going to pick up numbers from someplace else, or did
I think between Polk County, we've had a lot of overflow from Polk County that we've been housing, and that's cyclical, but it goes up and down. But we've definitely been consistent with Polk County, as well as U.S. Marshals.
I was just confused because I saw we do not see the inmate numbers diminishing in FY21, and then I didn't see the 20 trend carrying into 21. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I think you're 50 short there.
Yeah.
So you were agreeable to raising it, or what
I'm
raising
it.
Okay. That's what's the difference? Go 275. You really think it's 250? I don't see it, but okay.
Today, as an example, we have two out-of-county inmates, two U.S. Marshals. We have no Polk County. We have no Dallas County.
Okay.
Okay.
And we have no ice.
Continue on, please.
Okay. So I'm going to move on down to, again, the Public Safety and Legal Services 2890-05, the miscellaneous federal grants. We re-estimated our current fiscal year up to $19,000. We have an average of $13,000 on that. The reason this year has been re-estimated so highly is the SCAP funds essentially are backlogged. And so we received in this fiscal year, FY18, and it sounds like FY19 as well is coming in. And so that really boosted that number up. As we get into FY21, they'll be caught up. And that SCAP fund really is kind of an unknown, anywhere from $4,000 to $9,000 or even less. That leads into our FY21 projected revenue. That just kind of show the difference of the three-year average with that. Going down to our 44-10-05 weapons permits. Again, we have a three-year average of $43,000. Our FY estimated is $30,000. We estimated FY21 at $40,000, and this is, again, cyclical. When the law changed from shall issue to may, or from may issue to shall issue, it kind of started a five-year cycle, and that first year was super heavy. A lot of weapon permits, the numbers went up. Second year remained strong, and you know, as it went on, it was strong, but it dropped steadily. So as we go back through this and estimate, we really kind of look back over that five-year cycle to see where we're at, because that's a good indication of how many renewals you're going to have.
I remember that was one of the first things I learned my first budget year was about that cycle.
Used to be permits were for 1 year and they had to be renewed each year.
Yeah.
Then the state moved it to 5 years, so we go, somebody gets permits 5 years.
Going a few pages further, the Public Safety Legal Services for Special Law Enforcement would be line 8520-05. This is money that we receive from like our drug task force seizures, and we had a lot of cases that again were backlogged, waiting to get cleared out, where money was sitting there in flux, and probably several years worth of some cases that had money sitting in there that needed cleared out and wasn't officially released to this line item, and so that was done this year. And so that really for FY20, our re-estimation shot that number up much higher than we anticipated, much higher than the three-year average.
Okay, so I'm sorry, but you re-estimated to 16, but you're already at 17,865, so can we at least match those numbers?
Absolutely. The reason it's different is because when I turned this in,
yeah, you're right. Yeah. So if that's okay, I have it circled here, so
yeah.
We'll just match those.
Okay.
Thank
you. Task Force, just they're very proactive. They're doing a lot of good work out there. You just never know from one case to the next what you're going to come across. Given that, and given the backlog of old cases that need to get cleared out, that's where we sit at that. And that really, going through the end of the document, highlights some of the bigger changes that we had identified.
Could we go to 44-40-05, Prisoner Room and Board Reimbursement? There's a three-year average of 93,995 and 94,95. The last 3 years through 19 were around there. They were all pretty similar. But then the first 6 months of this year, you've gotten nearly 60,000 there. And I wondered if you had an idea of why there was such an increase from, because that would be annualized to 120. I was just wondering why it had gone up from 92,000 to a possible nearly 120,000 in fiscal 20. And I was going to say, is it occupancy rate? Is it what your daily population is? Or is there something else that is driving that?
Yeah. There was a law change this year, the judges cannot order that in restitution. It goes on civil fees, and I think think that has an impact on the numbers that we're seeing this year on what we collected. Once that law changed, it really drops off the amount that we're going to be able to collect.
But it's higher this year. When was the law changed?
Correct. And I think that for the majority of this year, correct me if I'm wrong, Connie, but the law changed in the middle of this year. And so we were collecting very well up to that law change, and then at that law change, it dropped.
Yeah.
So we probably, if that law hadn't changed, we probably would end up, we would have re-estimated at a higher rate, but we don't anticipate finishing out this fiscal year collecting as much.
And when was the law change effective?
John, where?
Thank you. It's probably at the beginning of the fifth year, I think around August. I'm not sure, but we can check real quick.
It's been like July 1?
Usually there's July 1 when there's a law change if it isn't on immediate publication, right? So it would have been in effect at the beginning of this fiscal year, and you collected almost 60,000 the first half of the fiscal. That's why I'm...
Sure.
You know, unless there's a lag there. And that might be very well that there could it could lag, because people are getting sentenced through July through December, and they're and you're still collecting under the old law.
Yeah, would they be prior collections that you could have?
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah,
that certainly could factor into
it. We do have a lot of outstanding that we do collect all the time, because people are on payment plans.
So there
could be cases that are out there that people are still going to be paying on for the next couple of years that are still kicking,
and
so it could be an anomaly too.
Only on new sentences, not retroactive to previous.
Correct.
So that would make sense. Okay, that's good information to have. Because I looked at it and I just, that's the thing you don't know, just looking at numbers and you say, well, I don't understand.
Right.
Okay. So it's got to be civil now?
Mm-hmm.
I'll hear more about that. Okay.
I have a more general question going back to contract law enforcement. So thank you for providing the rates. The narrative's really so helpful, especially this year when you've broken out. But so, Paul, have you had that conversation yet with the various mayors or city councils? Because I know, don't you have like once a year some type of meeting with them?
I started that a number of years ago, mm-hmm. and representative from the board and the mayors would come in. I think it was 2 years ago, we entered into a multi-year agreement. So was it 5 years that we did? A five-year agreement with a set amount increase each year, 2%, let's say, or 2.25% each year, unless, you know, based in that with the cost of living. That's with our dispatch contract. Okay, 2%, 2.25% increase each year. And that way we didn't have to meet with the mayors, and we will meet with them when they are in their fifth year, getting ready to go into the sixth year. We'll bring them back in and have another discussion with them.
Thank you. I know there wasn't one last year, so.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
And along that line, I don't know if you're going to cover it, I'll jump in here. We had a meeting with the Polk County Sheriff and a representative from the Boone County Sheriff's Office considering the city of Shelville. And it's one of these communities that's divided into three counties, and we have a few houses in Story County. Boone has five houses in their county, and Polk County has the majority of Shelville. I would think that is in their county. So we met, and it would be better if one agency provided law enforcement for Shelville. And that would take a 2080 agreement. And when we had this meeting, we also had the county attorneys from each of the three counties there working with us. And after we discussed this, went back and forth, it was decided that Story County would enter into an agreement with Shelltall to provide Shelltall their law enforcement services. The county attorneys right now, where it's hung up, I was hoping it would be done by now, but where it's hung up is we're waiting for the 2080 agreement to be finalized between the three counties, and you get lawyers involved to kind of drag things out a little bit. So anyway, when that happens, Shelltall has been given a copy of their contract and the price of that for budgeting purposes. So when that comes in, we're anticipating that will bring in, well, it will bring in another $19,819 and that will be from the rural basic fund where the contract law enforcement goes. So anyway, we get to.
Did you include that in the revenues?
No, it's not included in the revenues because we don't have a signed contract at this time.
Okay. But it was noted we had narrative on it, though.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks.
And then also with we've been talking with community services regarding substance abuse transports in the future, hoping that comes around. And if that does, that will have a slight impact as well.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Community services, they're going to start helping with substance abuse transports.
In a community services department?
Yes.
Okay, transporting to where?
Wherever the court order says. Used to be they could only transport if there was a mental health component,
okay.
And then they would transfer that or provide the cost reimbursement for the transfer of that. But now they've notified us that it's changing, and they can now do substance abuse transport as well.
For. Reimbursement,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then when we get the community services budget next week, then we'll look for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have something.
Okay, thank you. So, I think we're ready for expenses.
I'm sorry?
We're ready for expenses, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my
only
question.
Unless there's anything else you want to know on revenue. Okay.
As we go through expenses, is this something going through this line item by line item? We could be here all day. Is this something that you would prefer to start off and asking questions?
Yeah, let's we can try that. Is that okay with
sure,
people?
Sure, yeah.
Let's look at page 157 first. And are there any questions there?
I have, well, there's 30 notes here. My question is for line 1999104. And it's about overtime pay, and it was up. It looks like it's going to be up. You've got half of the year at 33,000. This is out of the rural basic, right, by the way. Okay. You've got about 33,000 doubled up to re-estimate about 75,000 plus and 75,000 into the new year. And I understand that it looks like it's a little higher than the three-year average also. So we're just anticipating more overtime for your next year. Or is this more of a kind of a real guesstimate?
Well, trying to make it realistic. In past years, when we've done budget and they said we got to reduce the amount,
mm-hmm.
we would take funds from things that we were high in, but we knew was the only place we could take it. Vehicle fuel and maintenance would take it from overtime, would take it from various things, and would just drop it down so we could come in the numbers that the board gave us, that
okay.
gave us to work with.
Okay.
And so we're trying to get back to real line budgeting. And try to give an accurate projection. But again, if we have, but overtime now is under the control of Board of Supervisors.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions on page 157? Okay, 158.
I'm gonna go. To 158 account 294, since they're all 19999. All right. So the uniforms and equipment, and once again, there's a jump here. We look like we've got a three-year average. Boy, it's up, it's down, it's up. I mean, there's really some variation there between 185 down to 104, back to 123. So far this year, you're on target for 92,000, but you've got a re-estimate of 134,000. And then for fiscal year 21, you're up at 203,000. So can you give me some insight on what might be coming there?
Well, again, this year's this line item has some big ticket items that we're asking for. And as we go through this, we'll point those
right.
out as well,
mm-hmm. yep,
such as...
Right.
We have the drones
mm-hmm.
that we're looking at, and that's 31,000 drones in training. Boat, motor, and trailer for the dive team, 9,245. Then we also have a ballistic shield for the attack unit, and magnetometer in the jail and a floor scrubbing machine for back in the jail as well.
And I did see all of those.
Yeah.
So that really is where you're looking at
yeah.
that rather than repurchase of uniforms, which I did catch the various
yeah.
line items also and stuff, but it's really the extra equipment that has been said. Okay, thank you.
What's the plan for using drones?
Well, the drones that we're looking at is one that has the capability to meet our needs. And we're not looking at an off-the-shelf at Best Buy type of drone. We're looking at something that public safety can utilize. One of the main important factors in a drone is called a FLIR, a forward-looking device that you can, at nighttime, you go up and you can see heat objects, whether it's a person, a deer, or anything like this. You also use it during the daytime. Last summer, I think it was, we had an individual do a robbery of a rural farm residence that we surrounded. Do you remember that? And so we called the state patrol because they have a FLIR in their airplane. But with their budget, they aren't even allowed to take it off the ground anymore. So they couldn't help us. So we called the guard up at Waterloo that flies helicopter for drug programs when they're doing that. And they told us the state has a FLIR, use them. And so we didn't have anything. There were some other counties that came over to assist, and they dropped their drones that were off the shelf, and they had a half camera in there, and you'd go up and look, and then 20 minutes later, you'd have to bring it back in, recharge the battery, and send it back up. So the drone that we're looking at has a variety of capabilities, and it not only the FLIR, it will be one that will be large enough that we can carry something like a life jacket out to somebody that's in the water and drop that. It could take a rope. It could take a variety of different things. And then whether we can do this with this drone or we'll have to look at another drone, we're looking at a drone that's tethered because drones live on battery life and they go out so long, then they have to come back and exchange batteries to go back out again. But when you have something, say, as a tornado, or you're searching something for an extended period of time, you can take a drone and tether it and send it up however high you want, and it'll give you a visual with the cameras and this, and it can stay up indefinitely while you're working that area.
Because it's charging, the tether is actually charging.
The tether is like an extension cord. Yep.
So, Linda, you worked here when Keith Morgan gave his last emergency management report, but he had mentioned drone searching, and the sheriff was in the audience, so the sheriff came up and gave us, Lisa and I, and the audience.
Was there anything that I left out? You
well,
have some other things?
Specific examples, several that I've been on, are just search and rescue cases. A lot of times missing children or mentally ill that wander away from home,
mm-hmm.
Especially in the time of year like it is now where it's cold out, it's imperative that you find them quickly. And so when you're limited to just a ground search only and manpower, which is what we've done traditionally, you're also relying on a little bit of luck with that. The drone really brings in a huge benefit to where you can get something up in the air with a FLIR and try to identify where this elderly person is or where this mentally ill person is. Or a lot of times there's kids that go missing. One instance I had kids to play. They went about a mile away from their house. They lived out in the country playing in a creek. It was starting to get dark out. The parents were getting very concerned. We got called to it. Obviously in a rural area, kids are a mile away. You can imagine the radius that is and how many manpower-wise it would take to search that through woods and grass. And so we were fortunate enough that one of the Lifelight helicopters were available, and they came up with their FLIR camera, and they located them right away, landed right by the children. At that time, they're about three-quarters of a mile away from the home, able to reunite them with the parents quickly, safely. And it could have been a scene where we're there much, much longer, or worst case scenario, who knows what may have happened to the kids. So that's just another specific example. Scene safety, officer safety, and the public safety. I mean, it just provides us with a great benefit to respond and resolve situations much quicker.
This has been on the budget. I know this is entering into my fourth one. Okay, every year. All right.
Yep.
And so my question then is that have we updated the numbers, or is this still the cost that you
this
feel?
Is the cost. I have a put together a small committee in my office. Nick, Captain, or Lieutenant Backus, and a couple others. One has even gone on to get his pilot's license for these. And so anyway, we've had it in a number of years, but it was one of these things that we took out because the expense was so bad. We've had some situations now we felt that the need has taken a higher priority in the sheriff's office, so instead of scratching it this year, I decided to leave it in and bring it to the board. We have had discussions with Keith Morgan, with other law enforcement agencies, and this is something, it wouldn't just be used for just the Story County Sheriff's Office. We could share it with other agencies in Story County that might need it, with the Ames Police, Iowa State Police. You know, an emergency comes about, we all come together through mutual aid, as you
know. Neither Ames nor Iowa State has a drone.
No.
Okay, and surrounding counties, you said they just have off the shelf. There's no surrounding county that has a drone of this quality.
Yeah, it's lower grade, lower quality, nothing with the floor capabilities, which is huge for a lot of the operations we would use it for.
The only agencies that had, I know Blackhawk County in Waterloo, they had three drones in their sheriff's office, one that does SLIR, one that does, they have, and then a couple, one big one that they have, and then two a little bit lesser than what the big one, but still more than the off-the-shelf brand that you would get. And that's the closest that I know, and for them to call, you know, that far and say, could you bring them down, that probably wouldn't get very much, wouldn't get a very good response. So
you also mentioned that you have one person who's went and gotten their license.
Well, that's part of the cost that we have in here, is I would like to have at least two, if not four, eventually, pilots. Because if you only have one pilot, we learned from Dive and ERT and all this, that when you have an event, they're on out-of-state vacation or transport or somewhere else, and they can't be used. So instead of doing that, our goal is to increase the number of pilots that we have. And one has taken it on upon himself to get his license. And has he completed that now?
Yes.
He took a test, so that was just a week ago he finally.
Right, and that's something, is that something just, excuse me, in Iowa, does that have to have a licensure, or is that?
No, that's an FAA.
Okay.
And there's different permits and stuff, and so there's a process for public safety to go through so that we can utilize that drone at nighttime. We can utilize it in restricted airspace. Just like any call around, we can request restricted airspace in certain areas. You know, another specific example is any accident that requires us to shut down a highway. We take Highway 30 or the interstate, for instance, or you take any of our county roads during the winter on an icy day and we have a bad fatality accident. Most of the time, we have to shut that down completely so that we can conduct a full investigation of that scene. And that presents many dangerous opportunities for everybody out there. The longer you have that shut down, you're in the roadway. And these drones now have the capability to go up in the air, map out, take all the measurements for you very quickly, and bring it down. You can go back to the safety of your car or the office, plug it in, and then do your scene from there. So there's many benefits that I could go on and on, but there's a lot of benefits to it.
I'm glad that the sheriff, as you went through your first pass through, okay, that you decided to leave it in consideration. Obviously, when we're all done, it's still you will determine how the money's spent, but I am one who am pleased to see that it made your first cut.
Thank you.
What, can I ask why the education and training is budgeted under the uniforms and equipment? Is it something different?
We wanted to be one big packet, so it wouldn't be, oh, here's the drone,
okay.
$24,000, but then you guys look at the training and say, we wanted it to be one.
Be together instead of?
Be together. So
instead of,
to
okay.
We have it listed out as a talking point here that we were going
to. I just know we try to keep all the education coded to the education and training, so next year when you look at your figures, it's attributed to the correct account.
If it's decided through this work session that the drone and the training stays in, at that time I'd have no problem separating the training and the training line item and keeping the cost of the drone where it is.
Thank you. it's easier to see the whole cost of the
I get that. I just, you know, in future years when you're looking back at my, on my computer.
There's some increase kind of above what you're spending now into 5005.
2505.
Into 6005. It's the vehicle fuel. It looks like you're on track to spend about 160 or more or something this year, but you've re-estimated it 206, then you got about $232,000 in for 21. So I just wondered what you were seeing that brought that up, because your three-year average is 165 on fuels and vehicle fuels and maintenance. And maybe I missed something in your narrative.
Well, I mentioned earlier, again, being one of our larger line items, this is one that when we have to make a cut to come in under budget, we have to pull money from somewhere. So we'll take funds out in different spots that we still aren't through this fiscal year yet, the 20 fiscal year. So.
Okay, I'm just looking at the numbers. I'm just looking at your three-year average and your trend.
Just the
and
average.
What you spent for half the fiscal and not seeing how you get to 231, unless there's something.
In years past, we did not cut any of the $3 a gallon this year. We kept our $3 a gallon across the board, and we didn't cut anything out of there. Whereas last year, we did take a couple dollars out here, a couple out from each of the divisions. That's part of it,
one other part of it is when we met with the board agreed to split the cost of vehicle fuel and maintenance for the MRAP to come out of here. And when we talked, we had some repairs that we had to have the MRAP and some other items that were added onto it for safety's sake. And the only place that could do that was St. Cloud, Minnesota. So we took it up there, and they did everything but the air conditioner, and they found a place in Des Moines that will do the air conditioner, and we will take that down this spring before the warm weather sets in, and they will do that. And then that's another part where the increase might.
Well, but I'm talking about the increase from 20 to 21, not your increase from 19 to 20. Your projected increase to 21 of 12%. That's what I'm asking about. Why?
And kind of you're saying that for fiscal year 21, you kept the whole $3. You didn't go back and try to rearrange and say this week gas is $2.57 a gallon or whatever it cut. So you left it free.
Right now, I really don't think we should cut.
That's exactly where I was headed.
Was that
I
direction?
Think
$3 a gallon.
$3. Yeah.
Okay.
Something else to note that's important to note here is, as you all know, technology just moves super fast, and law enforcement, it seems like every time we get something technology-wise, it's out of date and there's something new. But not only that, there's new technology. And so as we add that stuff into our cars, it doesn't allow us to shut the cars off for periods of time while you're on duty. So those cars need to idle for that technology to keep that temperature control, to keep certain aspects of it locked in and on and ready to go at a moment's notice. And so when a deputy is taking a break or when a deputy stops in at the office, traditionally in the past, you can turn your car off a lot more and leave it sit. You'll see with just about any law enforcement agency now with the technology in the car, you really got to leave that idling. Otherwise, you have a 5-minute
line of
time to get into your car trying to respond to something urgent.
I have a question on 129.05. It's your employee retention. So it looks like you readjusted your expenses to 5,000, and then you've increased up to 12,000. Are you including anticipated new folks, or I see that you have an average turnover rate. I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah.
When
we
you
actually are really pushing to increase our reserves, and when our reserves, we have to do testing for them, we have to do the post test for them, the MSCI, just like if they want to make a full-time.
Gotcha. Okay.
And we really are pushing to have that, so that is why there's a big increase there.
We used to have a cap of 20 reserves, and now I can't remember the time back when we've had 10 reserves. Now we're down to like 6. And part of the reason for that is the training, the reserves have to go through is almost as much as a full-time deputy. And so when somebody comes in and commits to be a volunteer for the sheriff's office, we pay for their training, of course, but there's such a time commitment that they have to put in. It's just very hard. So we're making a push to recruit back. A number of years ago, we were 7 down in the patrol division, and if it wasn't for the reserves, I don't know how we would have got through. They come in and literally man shifts on the different shifts, and it literally got us through.
Okay. Thank you.
In 260.05 office supplies, can you explain me why it's increasing so much in 21 over 20? I know you've got an itemization say this is what things are going to cost, but I don't know what they, I don't know where the increase is. So I'm just asking, because you've got about a 26% increase. Your average, 3-year average is 24,600. Those are fairly stable. Then for half of this year, you've got 11,157, so that takes you to 22.5. How are you getting from, you reestimated to 38, but I don't see where, what are you expecting to be different from the previous years?
This is an unpredictable line item, obviously, because we don't know how much supplies we're going to go through. And, the 28,000 was spent last FY for office supplies in general, such as paper and in general. So we went with that and lowered it to 20,000 for this
2021. We're looking at 260.05. I've got 35,000.
I'm looking at one particular part.
Okay. Then I don't. Yeah. Go ahead. Then I'm sorry. I don't have that.
No. That's okay. That's where that was affecting us.
But isn't that
office supplies for the jail, support services, dispatch, paper, patrol, anything like that. Business cards, I mean, that's everything like that.
Right. I think we speak for Linda, but I'm kind of looking at that too, is that you budgeted last year at 38,650, if I'm looking at that correct, you used 24,317. And so far for half this year, you've done 11,157. I think that's what we're just trying to figure out. Then you went to the
I know we still have things that we have to buy, such as toners, AED batteries. We still have some big ticket items that will still be coming out there.
I know the original request was 38,000, but then it was re-estimated to be 35. I'm still just trying to figure out when last year your budget was 38, but then you only used 24. I'm just trying to figure.
Just the
big jump there when you've only used in the last couple of years 23 plus, 24 plus, and then you're re-estimating it to be that 38.
That's an item we
look
at. Can we talk, jump back up about the inflatable boat? Okay. Yep.
Which number is that? Sorry.
Oh, okay. We're back up to the general equipment and
294.
Thank you. 294. I need better cheaters. Okay. So that second with its trailer and whatever to the dive boat, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Lieutenant Backus.
Aha.
This is another item that we have taken out before coming to the board for several years.
I'm sorry, what was your question?
Okay. if about needing the inflatable boat and the difference between the dive boat.
Yeah, okay, so we currently have a large boat that's fully functional for boat operations on large lakes, some rivers. It's equipped the way we need it, it's very functional. But a lot of the things we do from the dive team perspective are in shallow waters, fast-moving waters, places that don't have boat accesses. We can't get that boat into the water to do the things we need to do. The searching for an inflatable boat started about 3 years ago when there was flooding near Gilbert, where a vehicle was washed off the road. A person was on top of that vehicle, and we could not get them. There was no way. We had to borrow a firefighter's private boat. It took about an hour and a half, 2 hours, before we were finally able to get what we needed to assist them. So, at that time, the sheriff had to start doing some research, start figuring out what we needed and how we could get it, how what it would cost. And so over those few years, we've been putting it into the budget, and so here's where we stand.
And also to expound on that just a little bit, the fireman from Gilbert who got his boat, it was a duck boat for duck hunting. So very shallow, very unstable, and the reason I said we're going to start pursuing this is because it scared the heck out of me watching rescuers going down there. The rescue attempt was more dangerous than just leaving the person on the car, you'd almost think. But we went ahead and did that, and that was just a safety item that if we're going to be going into fast-moving water or rivers like that, we need something that we can do safely, and that's what this boat and motor does.
Thank you.
I want to go back to 29405. You've got a line item that just says miscellaneous equipment for $1,000. Can you provide a little bit more detail? Just looking through your budget, I see a number of areas that have miscellaneous. So I'm going to want more justification when I see miscellaneous equipment or miscellaneous training with that.
The board, you know, as we've gone to this approach for the last 3 years, has been very good to the sheriff's office. I don't doubt that at all. But I don't want, and I don't think the board would want, every time we need to get an extra box of paper clips, that we got to come to the board and say, Mother, may I? So we do put a little bit of things in here like this, and we don't think it's an extravagant amount, but there are things that come up, and we're projecting a budget for 18 months down the road, as we all know. But as things come up, we want a little bit there so we can do that.
Yeah, and I don't think you have to come back to the board, you know, every time we need another box of paper clips. But the reality is, in any budget, you're going to overspend. You may overspend in some category and underspend in another. So you may have money you can transfer within your budget for that box of paper clips or something, and you only come back to the board and you're saying, "I'm not going to make it through the year, and here's the reason."
And we do
that.
And we do that.
But what I'm saying is that a miscellaneous every place means you're adding in money.
We're padding the budget, is what you're looking at.
Well, I think you're adding in money, but you're not looking at the fact that maybe in some line item you're not going to spend 100%. That's just my viewpoint.
Yeah, and I guess over the years that we've managed our budget, I think we've been very responsible with our budget. And there's been years in maybe not here in Story County, but there's other places that if they have money at the end of their budget, they run out and buy stuff right away, so they use their budget. We don't do that here. There's been years we've turned back to the county over $300,000. And we've always been very proud of that because I'm an elected official too, and I also watch taxpayer dollars. But throughout the year, we have this so we can function, and at the end of the year, unless I come and talk to the board specifically about a certain need that we have, you don't see me going out and spending that money that we have at the end. It always goes back to the general fund.
You appreciate that.
No, appreciate that. Just wanted some clarification on it.
Okay.
Yeah, I can think of a couple of times when you come in and there's been something near the end of the year where it's been on budget that you come back.
Sure.
Some other consults or whatever.
Yep. No, thank you.
I'm looking for something missing here. Okay. And that is when you and John came over and talked about, I'm going to call it the wrong thing. You've corrected me before, Paul.
Okay.
You ready for one more time? All right. But it's like the electronic locking for the cell doors and the doors.
John?
Yeah.
The
$138,000. Okay.
Yeah, the capital improvement plan. I think it was originally part of the capital improvement plan that we have for the big building.
And that was my question. Have you taken that 138? Because you guys had come and talked to, I think, me, and then checked in with Lisa, and then I guess maybe Linda's got one, or then came back. But about you were hoping maybe to pull it out of fiscal year 20? The vendor had a price. $138,000 is stuck in my mind.
Well, it was because we were looking at changing a vendor and going to a different vendor. That was about 400 and some thousand.
It would be, if we would put it out for bid, it would probably be about 400, 500,000. We had, Mike was able to get a hold of the actual vendor that did it. They're the ones that actually built the original.
Right.
They came back when we started to ask about it. They said, hey, yes, since we already know the layout of the building, we know everything like that. We know that we can do it for this amount of money, which is about 138, if I'm not wrong. I think it's pretty cool.
That's what I put in my little spreadsheet at the time.
They know the schematics of all the wiring they've done and
right,
how that connects.
Right, right.
So to them, it would be more of an upgrade of doing it. But somebody else coming in, if we went out for bid and got another vendor, they'd have to pull all the old stuff in and redo it. And I mean, it would be a major disruption.
And because it was an upgrade, we could do it without having to put it to bid. So it doesn't appear to be in these figures, and so that's why I was wondering.
Correct. I think what we're looking at, I guess, I don't know if it's something worked for at the end of this year, if there is a surplus, that I don't think we were kind of looking at. See if we can do it.
That's what you'd asked about.
Otherwise, we can surely... It was part of the original CI capital improvement plan. If you want us to do a new one, I mean, that, I know that the thing I think we were worried about is that one plan was getting bigger and bigger, like $3 million for the whole thing. So do we want to start knocking that down into more manageable?
It was originally included in that big plan, but as we see the need for getting the system, needing it before maybe this upgrade to the Justice Center.
It is no longer be, and I think the biggest issue that we brought up this year was that it is no longer going to be supported because the equipment's so old. So if something would malfunction, it would no longer be where we come in, hey, I need this part. No, you're going to need the whole thing.
Kind of like our dispatch equipment has been. They don't even support it anymore, and they aren't supporting this. So if we don't have the upgrade, and it would go down, it's not a matter of calling them and they switching it out, you know, in a couple of days. They have to rebuild it, and then they come out and do that. And during that time, instead of running things from master control, you've all seen how that's done, opening the doors and that, jailers are back to the keys and going in with keys and manually turning
them. So I'm clear, you're not including it in this budget, but would be looking at coming to us later in this fiscal year? Is that, I just want to make sure I understand.
You might have funds available. You just get it done this year.
Well, okay.
Yeah, that's where the confusion is.
The model that we used the last 3 years, that could be a reality.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know where, you know, the county's going to be at the end of the year because you guys, you know, have the whole book. But this would probably be one of the asks that we would do, hopefully, that we could do it in that fashion at the end of this fiscal year.
Got you.
End of this fiscal year, instead of putting it in this budget. And also being in the capital improvement plan, if I remember right, that's where we had the $450,000 estimated, because that would have to go out for vendors then, or for a bid. And so, but now that we've talked to them and they can do it, we can do it for the $138,000 and...
would that mean you would disregard then what's in the capital improvement plan? That would not have to be considered, that could be taken out in other words.
And the other problem is the capital improvement plan is kind of in nebulous land out here. It's just kind of floating around. And we don't have any real anchor of when anything's going to happen.
Sure.
And, you know, like everything else, we moved out to the Justice Center in 2002, and the equipment's getting old, and you know, we've already replaced some equipment that's broken down, and this is one of the items that we have out there that runs all the doors. And if that goes down, it's not going to be an overnight fix, and there's going to be problems.
Got it. Okay. So if I'd like, if I go back to the process and mechanics here, okay. So the another thing that when we got our projections for the first round, okay, she showed with those projections an ending fund balance of 24 point something percent, you know, in the general fund. And we like to really keep that at 25% because it helps pay bills. Okay, so now 138,000, while it's not humongous, it's not tiny either. And I think we need to get it into the budget now so that when Lisa's running her figures, especially since the difference here from if we don't do it in fiscal year 20, is then you're looking at necessarily then the capital improvements. And what you're talking about, that $450,000 estimate, that doesn't exist in our capital improvements plan anymore. They're talking about something that was turned into, I think, 2018, all right? So our current plan now would include this as part of that much larger Justice Center remodel. And Joby had originally, it was estimated at, no, sorry, scratch that last sentence. I just confused it with the training center out. Okay. All right. So you're going back.
So it's not included in the re-estimates. Are you anticipating a budget amendment for that amount, 130,000? Because that would determine that. That would make a difference with the ending fund balance.
Okay.
Well,
so,
I think
all right.
The biggest thing is that since the capital plan is something that's outside of our budget, that's where it originally was placed. So I guess that's, I think the only other thing that we were thinking about is that we did have a surplus. Sure, if we can use that for them and get that done, but I think we still need to address, do you need us to submit another capital improvement plan all over again? Or, I mean, that's, I guess, would be
no,
a
right we'll handle that when we come to it, because we come close to the 11th month of the fiscal year, and we have funds, or we'll backdate when they, how long they think they can get it done, because we have to have it in place, pay for it before the end of the fiscal year. We backdate that, we work with the vendor how long it would take, and then we order it if we have the permission from the Board of Supervisors.
And that's just what I wanted. If you have the funds, it's not going to change the 24%.
Thank you. Okay. All right, great.
Well,
but if you need an amendment, it would change the 24%.
Well, the discussion that we would have, it may come, say if we're pretty flush with our budget at the end of the year and we can't do it out of our budget, but I could still come to the Board of Supervisors to see if the Board of Supervisors would think that it would be appropriate to take that $138,000 maybe out of that 24% now instead of, or some other department might be over. I'm just, these are just things, and if you say no, then we continue on the way we are until we have the funds to do it or until something breaks and go from there.
Gotcha.
Well, okay, let me ask this question again for clarity because I want to make sure. If there were a budget amendment now or between now and the end of the fiscal year.
We're definitely going to do a budget amendment. Before the end of the fiscal year.
So for, okay, let me continue. For the $138,000 expense, does that change what we're looking for carried forward?
Yeah. Any fund balance estimate at this point in time data. When we get to the end of the fiscal year, all sorts of things affect that. So people who have vacant, I mean, and by fund too, depending on the fund. Yeah. So people, all departments and offices are going to have, no one's going to, hopefully, the smaller departments, I can't speak for them, but most people come in under 100% or whatever they're appropriated at, and that all goes into fund balance.
Mm-hmm.
Lisa does the very best she can at projecting what the fund balance is, but she did that, you know, at the end of December, and we still have 6 months of the fiscal year left to go.
So the bottom line is, even if it's going to be taken out of funds that are currently in the sheriff's office budget for this fiscal year, it still does impact overall numbers.
I don't know that's necessarily what I was originally asked.
I
was
asked
from our general fund, not from the money.
So Lisa used the re-estimates to get the ending fund balance.
Well, there's what
Lisa just said.
That's why Lisa collects the re-estimates for the year. They're not amendments. So whatever they think they're going to spend, that's how she calculates that.
Then
ending
that's
fund
where
balance.
I
but if they have the money within the budget, it wouldn't affect the ending fund balance.
Right.
That's hypothetically. Right. But if they don't, then it would come out of the ending fund balance.
All right.
I just
so
think
so
that's
it would increase the re-estimate.
Yeah.
Okay. If it does not increase the re-estimate,
it
doesn't
would not. It hypothetically wouldn't.
Now, as the budget is done now, there's the personnel and benefits and overtime, things like this, is under the control of the Board of Supervisors. Realistically, it's still all my budget as the sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at the entire budget, operational and personnel, as we get into April, we can look at the entire budget. Mm-hmm. And if we, Lisa can forecast that we would be able to get through the year if we spent $138,000 and still make it through the year, then we're good to go without coming back and asking for additional funds through an amendment.
Well, my understanding is as long as it doesn't take you over your reestimated amount, mm-hmm. it will be okay.
Yeah.
The reestimated
budget
on
not just the operational portion.
Correct. She's got all the salaries and everything calculated.
Yeah.
So I'd like to project forward and let's go to the point where April comes, Lisa updates numbers, and you don't have the $138,000 there. All mm-hmm. right. At that point, then you would be looking to come back to the board to do it, or can you hold until maybe 2 or 3 years out? It doesn't sound like it's wise to hold. I mean, I just answered my question I've asked. But anyway, so I'll let you answer.
Well, I guess the way I would look at this is if we get to the end of the year, maybe some things have happened that we feel the end of that system is a little bit more imminent and okay. hurried than it was, then I would come to the board individually, each board member, and have a discussion and see if that's something that the board might, you know, would look at entertaining. And if it is, then I would ask to have it put on the agenda because it's an amendment item, and I'd come back up and we would talk sure. in front of the board.
And you understand why it's far preferable if it's within your reestimated amount, because then it's not impacting the fund balances
yep,
that we're
absolutely.
All looking at that we need for next year.
We get all that. I'm just laying out the different scenarios that might occur.
Sure.
And if it comes to the end of the year and we don't have it, we might just think, hey, it's going along, we'll just knock on wood and hopefully we can get by until we can find funds another time. So there's just a lot of unknown variables out there. So,
mm-hmm.
But
thanks.
We wanted you to be aware of it.
Okay, thank you for taking the time.
Thanks for bringing
it
back up.
I just didn't want to miss it somewhere. Thank you.
Thanks,
John,
for
knowing what I was talking about.
414-05, Communication Services.
What is that again, Linda?
414-05, Communication Services. 3-year average is $57,000. You spent $25,000. For the first half of this fiscal, but you've got a 69,380 as reestimated. Is there something big coming up in the second half of the year?
Well, as you know, we're in the middle of quite a big deal now. In previous years, with Motorola and EE having our contract, mm-hmm. when we would have a negotiated contract with them for the equipment, if we paid it all that we owed them for the year, by the end of July, they would cut 10% off. So it's been the practice of the county that we would pay that by the end of July, would get the 10%, mm-hmm. and then we'd have that remaining amount to function in communications. But now we're moving to new radios. They will be paid for, but then we'll have service fees, and we'll have a lot of unknowns coming in. Anything else you'd like to that I didn't cover there, Dina?
I think we just want to have a little bit of money in the event that we have to do or anything that we need to do as we are moving from
I'm not sure that I understand specifically what it is that you're saying is being increased over current.
Pardon?
I'm not sure. Are you talking about maintenance fees for the radios? Because there aren't maintenance fees.
No,
I'm
existing
the
electronic engineering system.
Mm-hmm.
We still have paging and paging issues mm-hmm. that we're going to be on for
okay.
the next year. So there's not, if we have anything that needs to be paid for those repairs, we need to make sure that we have money in that.
Okay, where is that in the itemization?
You're talking about 414, right?
I'm sorry.
Page 170 on there, too.
414-05.
Okay.
The exact question looking at 414.05 is 3-year average of this line item is $57,000. Have only spent $25,000 for the first half of this fiscal year, but you're re-estimated at 69 and you've got 70 for 21. So I'm just trying to figure out why.
Some of the bills come in quarterly, like the Iowa NDIC, we just received one.
So you're saying you may have had only one of those in the first half of the year, but you may be paying three for the second half. Okay. Are there any? Okay. Is that the majority of that difference?
So the cell phones, we've increased those as well for devices that are needed for the control units to make sure that they have connectivity for the mobile.
Okay. It just seemed like a large increase and wasn't explained. So that's, it's good to see an itemization sometimes, but you don't know what increase when it's just an itemization. So it's good to have it in the narrative. This is because we have an X, and this was an X percent increase or something. Then I don't have to ask the question because you've explained why the increase. The itemization doesn't explain what increase and why. Okay.
Thanks. I have a question on 422.05, which is your education training. Again, I'm going to kind of go back to the miscellaneous on there, Sheriff. I'm assuming, but I just want a little bit more clarification, is not knowing what training your officers may need or what the cost may be. Is that why it's just listed? Because I see that you have listed miscellaneous training looks like for the sheriff about $3,000, and then you have miscellaneous training for the chief deputy about $3,000, miscellaneous training for the office manager.
Total miscellaneous is $38,200 or 18%.
Yeah.
The entire operational portion?
For that line item for FY21.
Say those numbers again, please.
$38,200 is unidentified or miscellaneous.
Just in that line item?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
That $38,200 is all the divisions. And as you go through the year, you have things that do come up that is an opportunity that we may not have been able to forecast. And we do like to... As you can see, we've always spent a lot in our training for our department. I like to think that's part of the reason that our insurance likes it so well. We don't have the lawsuits. We don't have the problems that a lot of other agencies have, and that's because of the strong push that we have for training. most of the training that me, my chief deputy, and some other division commanders do is paid for by other sources, as we do a lot of training and we're involved in a lot of national programs. There are occasions that come up that I will send one of my commanders in or I will go that is not reimbursed. There's not many of them at all, but it still keeps us in the loop and it still keeps us viable, I believe.
It is a good training program and it's a good training budget. Nevertheless, the last 3 years, the average has been $124,209. You spent $49,000 this year. You're asking for 216, so it's a significant increase. So there's, when it's going up that much, it seems like there should be something, because you have been doing good training. I've signed a training request, and I see that you send people to a lot of good training. That's mm-hmm. not new this year or next mm-hmm. year.
I know that there's in. $8,000 bill that's still planning on coming through the deputy of ILEA. We're going to be having another deputy go through ILEA, which is going to be another $8,000.
Mm-hmm.
Another $8,800. So that's two big trainings that have not mm-hmm. come out of this year.
Okay. So the 49 is going to be higher than 100, 100,000, but is it going to be 180?
I would actually have to go through because I don't have
the reason. Okay, sorry. I don't see it in, again, there's a narrative that says we have this, but it doesn't say where the increases come from, why is it more? Okay. But I think that should come down.
Okay. It keeps taking away from that $138,000 we may need at the end of the year, too.
That's where you've got it. I'm talking about next year, not this year, not the re-estimated. Maybe you'll have some contribute to that from the re-estimated, but I'm talking about the 216 next year.
Yeah, I'm with
that.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, in my mind. The consultant fees, the three-year average of $4,000.
What number are you on?
I'm sorry, it's for the next one, 428.05. A re-estimate of about $6,000 for this year, but $10,000 for next year. So I just wondered.
Okay. The reason why the increase there is because the amount that we pay our armor to armor our weapon was taken out of that uniforms and equipment, and we moved it to this line item. It was taken out of 446. Excuse me.
So armor fees was taken out of 446,
which has gone down 22%.
Yeah, that should have decreased, and we transferred that over to this line item.
Okay.
It was more appropriate.
Good. Okay.
Okay. 457, since you're down here.
So, there is.
Okay. The compact utility tractor, which also showed up, I think, on the CIP request. But anyway, so the compact utility tractor, and then down before you have maintenance for the Kubota tractor. So the Kubota is what you have now?
Kubota is what we have now, and looking at what the pleasure of the board would be, the tractor is an old tractor. And we would like to replace it and get a different tractor to meet our needs out there. And by doing that, if we get that, then the maintenance for the Kubota goes away. But if we don't get the tractor, then we need the maintenance for the Kubota in there.
And, Loris, I don't believe we put it on the CIP for this go-around.
Oh, okay. I remember where else it was discussed. Okay, sorry. Yeah. Okay.
All right, yeah.
So just, I'm sorry, just inconvenience. So you're looking at replacing a current tractor? Is that what you're...
Yeah, like
okay,
to.
So the replacement, like what you're
saying. This tractor is nearing 8 to 10 years old, minimum of 8 years old. It might be close to...
What do you use it for?
We use it for our everyday, We use it for our mowing. It has a small loader on it. We use it, as you know, the range is a pretty big piece of property. And so there's maintenance that needs to take place out there. We have some rock out there that periodically needs to spread out. We have heavy targets that need moved around. And so it used to be in the past that the conservation took care of the maintenance on that property. And they had some cuts and some changes, and they weren't able to keep that up. So at that time, we had a necessity to purchase a mower of our own. And so we purchased this small tractor. It's a small lawnmower with a loader on it. And frankly, probably a little undersized for the property.
Does Joe Quaker's shop out there have a tractor? Is there any? Because I know they're out there too.
He doesn't have a tractor with a mower on it. I'm aware of. I think.
And I don't know if he has a loader on it. I don't know what Joe Quaker has, but you know, we have something. We use this all year round. We shoot in the wintertime. We got to go out and clear the lanes with the bucket, and we got to. I mean, there's just general things that come up that we use it for. And we haven't in the years previous before we got it, we relied beg and borrow on everybody else on conservation and secondary roads and things like this. But now that we got it, we and. The captain said, the reason we got it in the first place was because conservation said they could no longer do it because their budget was...
I just thought, when there's times that agencies can work together, departments can work together, and not everybody has to have a mower or this or that, but you're saying they're not doing it there anymore.
They're not, and there's, like Sheriff said, there's plenty of other reasons we need something out there for the maintenance of the property.
And what's convenient for us isn't always convenient for another department to drop what they're doing and come out and do it or schedule it or whatever. So.
Sure. Up at 446.05, on your narrative and stuff, you have new under communications, it just says new equipment, $10,000. What is the new equipment?
The 10,400?
It just says 10,000 under your line item.
Okay.
Under, under the narrative.
It's right above dive team.
It says new equipment.
Yeah, it's right above the dive team. It just says new equipment 10,000. But
that's just for anything that we have on the budget for with the array system. It is going to be a new system, and so there may be some things that come up that we aren't aware of. So we just put that in there.
You're talking about with StoryCom?
Yes.
Well, let's hope that there's still some money left in StoryCom for any unanticipated needs. That's what we're hoping to see. So I think they're... Yeah, okay.
We all have our fingers crossed, but as we also roll out the radios in the jail, not knowing what extra equipment may be needed, Dina, correct me if there's anything to add to that, but beyond the StoryCom project.
So, the next one is it's 294, but then it also 636. And what they have in common is under 294 is $1,700 for a tablet for the commander, ops manager. And then under 636, it shows there's a computer for the squad room presentations and then, well, in the podium, but I'm really interested in the IT equipment. Would these be showing up in the IT budget also? You didn't turn those into IT. Okay, I just wanted to make sure you didn't have duplicates there. Okay. And then it looks like also under 636 for office equipment, you're going to replace the office guest chairs. Right? It's time to do those? Okay.
We have original chairs. And when you, when I go into Captain Money's office and I stand up and I take
them, got it. Okay.
They're
exactly
looking.
I got it. Okay.
I've been in for about 20 years now.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to ask basically how many. So you're replacing all of them for
all the guest chairs in each of the individual.
Got it. Okay. So I'm going to go back to my question about the tablet and the computer. So because I thought all of those requests were going through IT, but so what is the delineation, Connie? I mean, that you guys, is it just the Sheriff's Department doesn't do that, or?
We go through IT for anything with our desk, but this computer that they want to put in the squad room is a designated computer so that if we have guests come that want to use our squad room for a presentation or if the board wants to come or
we do our own training.
There's one computer that's associated with that that's always going to work. Because we've had times when we've gone to training and we've taken our laptops in there and all of a sudden the laptop won't play the DVD we have to play or test or something like that. So once we've designated for that, we're not scrambling to find something. Highway Patrol, Iowa State Patrol has used our squad room for presentations.
I've asked the question poorly. I appreciate your answer, but it was okay. Just about ordering them. I mean, because for some kind of new price or something. That's what I
think. IT for helping with the pricing.
Okay. Thank you.
IT has been a part of the conversation.
Okay. Thank you.
And they might know something for that. Are you looking for like a console or a laptop that you keep there?
It would be a laptop.
Okay.
Within our podium, it would probably be some of those features built into
that. Built into that. Okay.
So
we're going to have a more. So I'm clear anyway here. The.
That's the squad room.
Yeah, squad room. Is that going to, what kind of piece of equipment then are we asking for here?
The computer with
the is that a laptop that's going to go here on the
well, I think the initial idea is a laptop, but depending on the podium, it really could be either.
Yeah.
Anything outside a laptop is pretty bulky, and trying to fit that into that room with a podium may not be feasible.
I just want to make sure we're talking apples to apples here. So, and the other one here is the laptop over here. That's the surface.
Yes.
So, any other questions on expenses?
None, thank you. Ram the gamut. The ballistic resistant glass, that is put in the facilities management budget for your office. We've got $15,000 budgeted for sheriff ballistic window system for front office.
I believe we
you took it out. I see where you took $13,000 out, but it was taken out of yours and put in the facilities management.
Yes, that's what I
just want to make sure they know that it's not going away. We're still looking at doing that project.
It's just
in a different
budget. Okay, that's
budget.
Good to know.
Yep.
So then we're done with expenses? Anything else? Okay. I seem to have lost some pages on the new position.
Well, do you want to talk about countywide expenses or no?
Oh, yes. Sorry. What page would we be starting on?
180.
180, thank you. Okay, Sheriff. Page 180, countywide, if you would please.
Okay. Any questions that
so these are all
so
special funds. There's some general basic, but others are special funds. Could you kind of explain the funds?
At the top, the sheriff's reserves officers fund. Mm-hmm. We have some budgeted in our budget for them. They also have their own fund, and that's when they work like Iowa State football games. They work outside projects. Instead of taking the money themselves, what the reserves have always done is put it in the sheriff's reserve account.
Okay.
And that's like back, okay.
That was my question, is where the money came from.
Okay.
Okay.
Medical care, the 302.99 account, just kind of looking, we're still re-estimated for fiscal year 20, so Nick, I'm going to just look at you. As far as you know, or maybe Connie, okay, all of the medical bills have come in from the problem pregnancy. Not yet.
No. We're anticipating about $25,000 bill to come in from the problem pregnancy one. Yeah.
Okay.
And I feel the re-estimate of $100,000 is probably low.
Okay.
We just turned in a claim, or we will be turning in a claim for $19,000 for medical. That does not include the pregnancy. That is for, there were some, if I'm going from memory, so I apologize if I don't have everything accurate, but that's from bills from partly September, October, November. For some reason, the medical industry doesn't feel they need to bill us in a timely manner, and we tend to get stragglers all the time, and it's very frustrating because I know jail administrator Austin is always calling them saying, get me your bills, because I'm always going to jail administrator Austin, you have all the bills.
Kind of a round robin there.
And it can be very, very frustrating because all of a sudden 6 months goes by and all of a sudden we get this bill from September. It's like, well, why didn't you give us this bill when we asked you for it in December? And it's very, very frustrating.
Thank you for the.
That would be a 19 and a 25 on top of 61.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that what you're looking at?
Yeah. So that when I re-estimated it to 100, I was kind of, what I did is because it's a new line item, I took any of the medical bills that would have fallen into this line item over the last 3 years and I did my own average. And it was about $100,000. Mm-hmm. And I knew with the pregnancy we had in the jail, I knew that it was probably going to be a little higher, and that's why I went up to 100. So that was what my thinking was. And I did my own 3-year estimate on that, but I couldn't include it on here because
got it. Thank you for that. Any other questions on the countywide?
I'd like to just clarify to confirm what I think I know, but Sheriff, when you and Nick had stopped by, just on a heads up about that, the trial that had been moved to our jurisdiction, and that those expenses, they're still absorbed through your budget until your budget can't absorb them, or do you come back to us?
Well,
through countywide?
We would have something that our budget couldn't. Excuse me, could not accommodate, then would certainly come back to the board. But we, I bring that attention to the board so you're aware of what's going on when there's a change of venue been granted by the court and they bring the court trials here. We still have to do our security. The other county will bring deputies to secure the prisoner and part in the courtroom. But we, again, we like to praise ourselves in Story County, and I think the courts appreciate it that when we do have a trial, we're still going to have our people up there because we do things a certain way and we want to make sure it's done correctly. Not that they can't, but we're making
right.
sure.
Okay, thank you.
May I bring up Court Order Services 41999? I wanted to tell you the reason I re-estimated it to 50. We have had two juveniles that we've had to house at Eldora because they cannot be in our facility for crimes they've had committed. I know one of them has now moved into adult court because he's turned 18. The other one has not, so we do have to pay for his room and board at the juvenile detention center. So that is why that is much higher this year than years past, because we've had some problem with juveniles. We've also seemed to have more extraditions that we've been going on, so that is the increase.
Thanks for explaining that. Okay. Anything else you'd like to know? Anything else from the supervisors or staff?
There's a...
Maybe just I'm sorry, just maybe a clarification back up on the 295.99. I'm just looking at, because you have the 12,000 in there, and then you re-estimate to 2,000, and then you put it for 12.
Because it's money that the reserves can spend how they want it, I could ask the tenant backers who's in charge of the reserve, is there any big purchase you guys plan purchasing with your 12,000 this year? And he said they didn't have anything on the radar.
Gotcha.
So I left it too, just because if they did find something, but they don't know.
Okay, so you just automatically put it back up to 12 because that's what's in there. Gotcha. Okay. Okay.
So
I want them to be able. I want you to think they're going to be spending it, and it's their money to spend.
Sure.
So
sure. Sure.
We can't
no. No. Yeah. Yeah. No. I would
use it for any other purpose. So it's
perfect. Thank you for that.
They just there was from the bullet point that I made. I wanted to also bring to your attention the jail transport van. We've had that for a number of years now, and you know, when we get a van, we buy the van, and then we have to buy or fabricate the insert where the prisoners are held, and that gets to be rather pricey. We're trying to figure out ways to do this, so when we do order one, instead of ordering a whole new van and an insert, what we're looking at doing is buying a either a 3500 or a 350. That's a one-ton pickup chassis. And then, like, we've seen this at Polk County, correct? Polk County?
Yes.
They have they do this where they then can just go out when it's time to change. They get the new truck, and then they save the chassis or the box, and then they just put that box on the new chassis. And so that way you aren't going through the whole van and the insert, and because after a number of years we have it, the models always change, and so one insert isn't going to fit into the new vehicle because that's going to have a model change. But we're not asking that for this year, but we did put it on the budget because it's a pricey item, and we want the board to be aware of it, that it is going to be an ask eventually. We can put that on.
So we're just 29. I have 29,000.
Did we put that on this year?
Yeah, it's on.
Yeah, it's on.
Okay. What page are you looking at, Connie?
Oh, I was looking at our
181.
Oh, and the 635.99 for the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the itemized sheet, I have it in red. I don't know if it's in color. But I have the jail transport in there, but I cut it. so you could see.
It's a negative. She's got them in parentheses.
Okay.
Here's how she noted it.
But just something I wanted to make sure the board's aware of, that it will be something that will be coming.
Grant City may be coming like in fiscal year 22 is what you're saying.
What, well,
or sooner?
John, how old is that van?
That's a 2013 van.
So 6 years old.
You might see. Mileage is on it?
John, do you know the mileage?
Just over 20. It doesn't get a lot of miles. It just is outside.
20, you said?
28, I think. 28. Right around there, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Anything else? So then we would be on to personnel requests. And it starts on page 163.
But we don't have a 160.
160 was what turned in with the budget.
It was your memo of December 16th.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. And a two-page memo with some information. Looks like there's a lot more in here, but it was considerable information. And then there was one on the initial cost of a position.
When we moved out to the Justice Center, we had in patrol division a staff of 15 deputies and 3 sergeants. So in the patrol division, not counting the commander, of course, in this, we had a total staff of 18. Here we are now at 2020, and our numbers in the patrol division is still 15 deputies and 3 sergeants. We're looking at modifying this a little bit, and we know this is a huge ask, but we also are saying we're going to be taking on another contract town. We anticipate that being Shelbal. We're looking at, if you look at 2020, the active shooter, the only thing we had was Columbine and maybe a couple others, but ever since then there's just been an explosion of things. Additional training, the different things that we do for the communities, such as doing ALICE training in schools, in churches, and in businesses that have asked for it. And we're just looking to increase our patrol strength. We believe that is absolutely necessary. When we are down in numbers, either from the military or from extended family leave or somebody moving on, there you can see the overtime spike. So I asked Lieutenant Ellis to put together the packet that was put out to you. And Leanna, would you go through some of the needs that we have here and what brought us asking for the additional staff?
Well, I guess some of the highlighted points as far as our request is that having the number of patrol staff being the same over the last 25 plus years. And since then, since just over the last 20 years, our population in the county has increased by 22%. Violent crime has increased by 25%. As we've seen even just recently, we've had some very horrific calls for service that we responded to. With the home invasion and robbery, where an elderly woman was assaulted severely. The homicide that we had
had recently, and then just this last week, a murder suicide that happened within our county, and I mean, those are just very recent ones. We see a lot more attacks on law enforcement, nationwide trend. I think I can there's just been kind of a movement with attacks on law enforcement, the anti-law enforcement rhetoric that's been around, which has increased the ambushes. We've seen them, even in our neighboring county, of St. Polk County, where two officers were killed within the last 3 years on an ambush attack. And so it's an officer safety issue as well, not only just a public safety issue. Of course, the increase of domestic terrorism that we're faced with, and we have some pretty potential targets even right here within the county, with having the National Disease Lab as well as Iowa State University, high number of population. We have an increase of firearms on our streets, more and more calls for service. You know, pretty much a street every call, like, there's a weapon involved because, we see more of them out there. I have more detailed information with some of these bulleted points. Increased gang members, of course, the opioid overdose rate has quadrupled since 2000. But then also, the expectations of law enforcement has greatly increased. You know, it's not back in the day where, we're just responding to calls for service and roads are great. You know, the community is expecting a lot more from us. Including policing, education and outreach.
The proactive patrol strategy. Really are the services. When you look at, I know in your speech you want to see what services this is going to provide, where the benefits are for the county. And Lieutenant Ellis did a great job illustrating the need for it and some of the increases, and she started to touch on the benefits. And that really, the benefits are extra patrol time in our towns, extra actual time in our towns where our citizens are seeing us. I know you on the board have received calls or had conversations with mayors or city clerks, where they highlight concerns from time to time about how much time's in their town, what they're getting for their services, things of this nature. This undoubtedly, with additional personnel, would certainly increase our ability to be in those towns. But moreover, as Lieutenant Ellis pointed out, we'll have the ability to be very proactive with outreach programs. We'd love to increase our outreach programs, things like reaching out to the elderly community about phone scams and how to protect yourself and safety, getting into our schools more, as we do a very good job already, but there's always outreach initiatives you can do with your schools, just your general population communities. We have a P3 campus that we initiated for the last year and a half now. That's really done some great things relationship-wise with our schools, communication. But every call that we get on that P3 campus tip line is a call for service for us that we're responding to. And so there's definitely the ability for us to have a lot more proactive patrol strategy. And that would include seatbelt projects, high crime areas that we need to spend more time in. Burglaries seem to plague us a lot out in the county. We can do some proactive stuff out there. Currently, we go back over our last year, we're pushing 50% of our patrol time is at our minimum staffing level of 2. And so, as you know, with our county, it's a fairly large county. Having only 2 deputies out there is very taxing. And so when you have 2 deputies, you spend most of your time responding and reacting, and you have very little time to be out there engaging the community and doing the things that it takes to build those good relationships, outreach programs, getting the community involved and partnered with our crime prevention efforts. And so those are some of the benefits that additional personnel brings.
I'd also like to address the sergeant position that we're asking here. My other divisions, as years ago when I first started, everybody was a jack of all trades and master of none. So if a dispatcher called in sick, somebody from the jail would go to dispatch, or somebody from patrol, or whatever. Then we created standalone divisions. And with the professionalization of law enforcement nowadays, you have to have people that are jailers trained as jail. Patrol trained as patrol. Communication trained in their specific area. We can't know any longer have somebody from patrol just going to be a jailer for a day. The liability is just too great. And what I started to model my divisions after was we would have a division commander, either sworn or non-sworn, and then they would have assistant division commander, and then we would go down to the sergeant supervisors in that fashion. Lieutenant Ellis, with all the increased needs that we've had, she either does it or she relies on the day shift patrol sergeant to do this. So that means his time out on the road is decreased. And there's more often times now that he's in the office working on projects that we need to have done instead of being out on the road. And then during the daytime, this time you might have one or two deputies out. So that becomes very vital in and of itself. Lieutenant Ellis does not only oversee the patrol division. She oversees the investigations division. She oversees the drug task force. And so with that staff and the duties responsible there, you know, the drug task force is combined of officers from Story County, from Ames, from Iowa State University, from the D&E. D&E, occasionally the feds jump in on certain cases. So she is a pretty full table where she is right now. I would like to get that patrol sergeant back on the street working with the shift as he should be, such as the second and third shift sergeants are doing, and that would give us the ability to designate that person as the, I guess, assistant patrol commander. And then that would take a lot of the duties and responsibilities off of her, and as the assistant would also be able to help out with administrative tasks in investigations as well as the drug task force.
Was that position the assistant commander? Was that in your request?
No, that's a sergeant that we're asking for. I'm just telling you how the sergeant would be utilized. Because
okay.
We're asking for a sergeant, and in the contract that we have a salary set out for a sergeant, but we don't have salary set out for an assistant division.
So you would
commander
be using that sergeant as an assistant?
Yes.
To Lieutenant Ellis?
Yes.
Which it sounds like you're kind of doing with your day shift sergeant right now.
Yeah, he's kind of being used like a rented mule. He's wherever we need him, we put him, and if we have a project that comes up, he's the one that's assigned to it.
That's the administrative duties that end up falling on the day shift sergeant, like the sheriff said, really takes him away from the direct supervision of the full staff. You know, the duties that are entailed there, it needs to be somebody that's at decision-making level.
It can't be delegated to support staff.
Correct.
Okay. That's a question.
I was just looking back at your expenditures in the budget, and you have quite a bit that you continually have in overtime. Peg, would you see that diminishing with additional staff or not necessarily?
A few years ago, we came to the board and asked for an additional person in communications because the overtime was killing us. People weren't able to take their vacations or holidays were being canceled. So that position was granted, and now we're up to where we're full strength again. And when that happened, the overtime in communications dropped off. So what we're looking at now, because I realize I'm one of the largest, or if not the largest, office in the county. And when you have that number of staff, what you're going to have is you're going to occasionally have vacancies. You're going to have extended FMLA. You're going to have military leave. Right now, out of the jails, you know I got two deployed to Afghanistan. Afghanistan and Iraq, one of those two, but they're deployed. And we have now received two more detention officers that have tendered their resignation for the end of this month. They're retiring. And so anyway, they're leaving, so now I'll be down two, and I just hired a third detention officer from the jail into the patrol division for a vacancy that we had there. So now, at the end of this month, I'm going to be down three DOs in the jail,
And we just hired one that started, so he won't be done with training, and he'll be no use to us for 3 months until he gets through his training. And so that, you know, I mean, we're down four right there. And so patrol, they're down. We have one that's going through training. We'll go to the academy. We have the other one we just hired. He'll be going to the academy this spring. And so our numbers are down. So when you talk fully staffed, it sometimes gets confusing. You know, when we moved out, part of not only the design of the building was a manpower study. And when we came out here, it said the number of people we should have in the jail, I think, was like at 38. And we moved out here, and I had to take two people from patrol, two people from dispatch, and our DARE officer, and move them into the jail because we didn't have the appropriate staffing to do that. The county didn't have the capacity at that time. So anyway, you know, what we need, we can get by as long as nobody calls in sick, nobody has extended family leave and things like this. And when we do, we're moving people around from shift to shift trying to create that balance. But anyway,
I have a few questions just for clarification in the proposal and what's in it, if I might.
Sure.
It references 18 deputies. Is that 16 deputies and 3 sergeants?
Yes.
And on the back of it, when you're looking at the comparisons of staffing in other counties, you're talking about supervisors, 21 deputies / supervisors in the county. That means a sergeant equals supervisor.
Yes.
Thank you. Now, under the what has happened over the past 25 years under trends, crimes against persons in Story County increased by 25% from 2000 to 2016. I take it that's all of Story County, including Ames.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you have arrest statistics or incident statistics on just what the sheriff's office has done during that time frame.
I don't have that.
DPS have that?
Well, like, I don't have it right now.
Okay.
I don't know.
But it's available.
We would have to query the computer to find that. But when you have these violent crimes, Story County is just not on the outskirts standing by. When they had the golfer murdered over in Ames, our dive team was over there for 3 days working with them, doing the things they needed to do. When they have robberies, we go in and help them look for the, I mean.
And that's the thing I understand about crime statistics and numbers is they don't always, you know, they don't always take into account all of those things. I just wanted to see an apples to apples as to what your arrests, what your cases have increased for what you're reporting.
I understand what you're asking for.
Yeah.
The areas, the unincorporated and contract areas that
exactly.
The sheriff is responsible for, what has been the increase over that same time
exactly.
period?
Exactly. That's what I would like
mm-hmm.
to see, if that's something that's doable.
I would think we could pull a report.
Okay.
We'll see what we can pull together.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to ask about is you've got some comparable counties listed. You listed Dubuque, Woodbury, and Pottawatomie. And I don't know the number of the mileage of roads in those areas, but I know Pottawatomie and Woodbury are quite larger geographic counties. So I didn't know if that makes
sense. I made those comparables on population.
On just population. Did you look at any other counties besides those? I know that's about the Woodbury, the next larger from Story, and Dubuque and Pott are the next two smaller.
There was a staffing analysis done, prompted by Scott County, within the last year or two, that actually we are ranked, for the number of sworn staff in Story County, we are ranked 98th out of the 99 counties, the number of sworn staff we have to set be sure.
Is that available? I'd like to look at that.
Yes, I can share that staffing analysis with you, the information that I have. The thing is, too, is, you know, you take into consideration then the other municipalities, how many law enforcement, officers are there as well. That 98 out of 99 does not take into consideration what those counties have for municipal officers. However, in doing a comparison, in just looking at the raw data, we are still ranked really low with the comparable counties as far as the base of the population, even taking into consideration how many officers.
So they had some kind of a funding formula they put together for that staff.
Well, this is all I have is raw data that I can forward to you, share with you, that shows, and it also shows the population per sworn deputy.
Okay. And the way I tried to figure this out, you know, in terms of your goal, I understand it was to have three on each shift, correct? I did a very, very simple thing using an 80% of time is available for being out on duty and looking at the number of hours, and I came up with a need of 15.75. That doesn't include a lot of things you've just talked about, I know. It doesn't include we've got somebody deployed. It doesn't include we want to take some of this time and put it to educational efforts in the community that, you know, it just says you need, you know, you're trying to cover hours. How do you do it? How many people do you need? If 20% of your FTE's time usually goes to, and that's a number that I think had been used for something else. So I said 20% goes to sick vacation training, whatever. Then you got 80%. You need about 16. But what? I don't know how you factor in all those other things. If you have a formula you've used for that, because I know this is bare bones.
Two years ago, when I first put together a proposal, I had those numbers in there based on averages, and I cut that out of the proposal because it's 2 years old. I can forward that information to you to where actually the numbers that I utilized as it pertains to the averages of people that were out with sickness at the time,
mm-hmm.
As well as hours that were spent doing different things, reactionary, whatever, that we were looking at needing three more deputies just to cover
patrol. Okay, so you have something, you factored those things
in. I do, but the data was 2 years old, so it's giving me the updated, but I can surely forward you the numbers that I had put together in 2007.
Would you do that, and then could we sit down and go over it so I understand it?
I would also like to ask the board to keep in mind that when we have a vacancy, like I just described to the board, mm-hmm. Both in the jail and in patrol, we don't go out on the street and in a couple of weeks hire somebody and then train them for a week and they're on their own. When we have a vacancy, it will take 6 to 9 months before that person is there. So the 6 to 9 months, that right now we're down two in patrol. Everybody else has to cover that for that time until that person, providing they make it through the training program and they're not cut out in their probationary period, we got to start all over again, which also just
happens. It's the academy now.
15 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's 4 months.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. From a couple of years ago, it
was 12 or 13.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps increasing.
Okay, so 15 weeks is 4 months.
What's that?
So that's 4 months. Okay.
And then we have our own internal training program that they go through when they come back through ours, which is typically at least 3 months to get them through our training program.
Okay.
We definitely want to make sure that deputy is fully capable, has been given everything they need for tools, education, training, before we throw them out there.
And our training program isn't just something that we put together with. There's also other agencies that we copied this off of, that we mirrored from, that it's a standard procedure in practice. The day of hiring somebody, like when I was hired in Waterloo in 1977, you were given a badge, a gun, and a nightstick, and they said, don't shoot anybody, and here's your nightstick. You can do whatever you want with that. So anyway.
You got the advanced training.
Yeah. That's right. And but anyway, we again, that's why I think our insurance company looks so favorably upon this office, as well as you don't see the lawsuits from here.
Well, anytime we put somebody out there with a gun and with the authority and responsibility,
yep.
Yes, we believe in the training, and we can't, you know, we don't want you to short the training at
yep.
all.
Yep.
This is essential if we're going to provide responsible.
We are the biggest liability to the county, I believe.
I'm sure. Can I go on to the initial cost for a position? The next
yep.
thing. Yeah. Am I seeing that you're buying a patrol car for every deputy? Is that what I'm understanding from this?
Yes, everyone except the jail transport. He used one of the jail vehicles.
Do all counties do that?
That's generally the routine.
Okay. Does the city of Ames do that?
No. City of Ames is much different. A municipality is much different because they have a much more confined geographical mm-hmm. area. My deputies start, when they begin their shift, from home. And so when they get in their car, if they're in Collins, they're on the job right then, and they're patrolling. They're called out at night for something, whether they're on ERT or the dive team or negotiations. They start right there. They don't have to drive all the way to the county check out a car and go. And this is the way it's always been done in Story County. It wasn't anything that I created. And if you look at most other counties, it's the same way. Another thing that's different, why all deputies have them, is because, like the dive team, we have Lieutenant Backus, who has been the dive team commander and still oversees that, as well as other duties he has. Mm-hmm. But Sergeant Quinn is now the active dive, so whenever they're called out, she goes as well. And whenever we're short, if we are short on patrol, and whether there's help needed in the court security side or the jail, we all chip in and respond at different times and different places.
Another thing, if I may add, that take into consideration with what we refer to as take home cards, is the fact that, plenty of agencies have done in the past as far as studies with the maintenance and the upkeep of vehicles and the longevity of the vehicles, that if you have a pool car assigned multiple deputies, then it's run around the clock 365 days a year or what have you, it doesn't last as long because the miles are getting put on higher, it's a lot harder on the vehicles, and maintenance doesn't get completed as regularly because we need to take responsibility. But each of the deputies that are assigned to patrol cars are also assigned to ensure that the proper maintenance and upkeep of those vehicles, and that's how we're able to make those vehicles last 4 years if they do versus having them end of life within a year.
Those are all good points. I'm seeing here that you're looking at going to 10-hour shifts for a shift overlap.
No, that is just kind of one of the, there would be an option to look at alternative schedules. That stands right now, we're very limited on the schedules. That's a union contract issue as well. It's just that I provided that as an example of that is one particular alternate schedule that we could entertain, but that's something that we're not committed to trying to do.
Okay. I was just thinking, if you have three deputies on at one time and you're overlapping, how many hours a day do you actually have six deputies on?
Well,
and what do you do with that? Is that overlap justify that as a
issue? Yes, and that is actually a benefit, not only to the citizens, but to our employees.
Okay.
You need proper shift briefings to take place.
Yes.
It also can contribute to lower overtime costs because there's a lot of calls that just can't go to and take care of in a half hour. You're stuck there for an hour. And so if that call comes out just prior to one officer's shift ending, the other officer isn't coming on until that time. And so there's usually an hour or 2 hours of overtime there. So there's a lot of contributions there, but there definitely is morale-wise and otherwise for those overlapping shifts to have those proper shift briefings to pass one call off to another and stuff like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I operated an agency where we didn't have that luxury, and I know what you mean.
Yeah.
We wished we had it.
Yeah.
We didn't.
And burnout.
We did. We had 15 minutes.
Obviously, if it's a benefit, it just gives us the flexibility to look at that to see if there's a benefit.
Sure. I know that transports impact your coverage as well when you're doing a mental health transport, and now the ability to get reimbursed to do the substance abuse ones as well. Have those numbers maintained your transports? Are they relatively steady? Are you seeing an uptick in that?
Well, the transports overall, there was a definite uptick. And even though we contract with Central Juvenile Detention Center, and now I believe Mary Greeley will be doing some mental health transport as well, that's taken some of the burden off, but it has definitely not taken off all the burden, and we're still seeing more transports than we would have seen 10 years ago. Because we still have to transport the ones that are volatile.
Right.
And then we are still doing some substance ones. We may be able to get some reimbursement out of another budget, but the substance abuse ones are definitely on the uptake as well. So if they don't have dual diagnosis, then we're getting them.
Gotcha. Thank you.
And getting back to vehicles just for a second, what I was heading into, and I pulled that possible shift option in it, and maybe that was a distraction of it. There are pros. I can see that in the column. But the other part of that is you've got cars that have been bought with taxpayer funds that are just sitting for a couple days a week and not being used. So that's why I just thought if there's any ways to look at, maybe not purchasing a new car for every new position, if there's some other options, I think that would be useful to look at.
This isn't the first time I've had this conversation. with different boards
okay.
throughout the year.
Well, it's the first time I've been here, so.
Yep. But I just want to know that this isn't something that's done helter-skelter or recklessly.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that you'll see, I believe, most counties doing. As Lieutenant Ellis mentioned earlier, when you have vehicles that are used all the time, and I know because 15 years in a municipal agency,
mm-hmm.
every year that agency is buying a new fleet of vehicles.
Okay.
Somebody gets in it that's not their vehicle, they could care less about it. If it gets serviced, if it gets anything, I mean, there's as an example, there's two types of vehicles you can take anywhere, a rented car and a company car. But in law enforcement, when we have to go places, there's sometimes it's rough on the vehicle. But if it's owned by the individual, it's been proven they take much better care of it because it's their own property. And having 4 to 5 years that we rotate with our vehicles, I see as a benefit to the county instead of every year having a smaller number that you got to buy instead of we on a rotation about 7 vehicles a year. That would go to maybe 12 or 15 vehicles a year you could be buying.
I can provide a specific example, a recent one, where some of those benefits of having those companies assigned and taken home will help the homicide we had in Zearing a month or two ago. We got a great immediate response to that, but a large contributor to that is because some of our personnel that we needed on scene immediately had that car at home, were able to respond directly to the home. As you know, our deputies are part of the communities. They live in Zearing, they live in Colo, they live in rural areas. And so with being part of that community, they have a car there where they can be called up and respond immediately. And so the Zearing call was really a prime example where we had a number of personnel that responded directly from their home and were there within almost 20 minutes of that call coming out. And if that had been different where they had to go to the office or go somewhere else to get a car, you're dramatically increasing that response time to a critical call.
And I recognize that because, in a situation like that, what you have is you have first responders who are volunteers in the community who are there trying to manage a situation they're not trained to manage or responsible to manage. So, yes, you want to get a deputy there as fast as possible.
And
I know the people there appreciated that fast response.
And also the communities love it when, even though the deputy might not be on duty, his car is parked out in the driveway, front and center, and people go by and they always know, hey, there's a cop.
There's a sense of comfort.
Yes, absolutely.
I responded off the from my own home countless times, from everything from kids smashing pumpkins down the street to a domestic in town. People have called me direct, knowing what I do for a living within my community, and to be able to have all the tools that I need and respond and be somewhere within 2 minutes is better than having to wait for somebody to respond and clear across the county. So there's a huge
step. It's just, that's one thing we have to realize is that on this page, it's not just the salaries and the benefits,
mm-hmm.
and you've done a good job of detailing everything. Here's the initial one-time cost, and then here's the ongoing cost for the position, because it isn't just salary. So I appreciate you giving us that detail. That helps. But we need to realize that that's not in the budget. If we add a position, we're also adding the initial cost as well as the ongoing cost.
Okay. Coming back to some of the outreach and educational trainings, opportunities, the potpourri of other duties assigned right now to this sergeant, the day shift sergeant. So I want to make sure I understand that this would put a sergeant back on the street plus in direct communication, direct coordination and supervision with the officers, and meanwhile there would be somebody else plus Lieutenant Ellis to go ahead and respond to these queries for outreach, for education, for the miscellaneous, everything that comes up, other duties as assigned, right? Okay. So how does that fit in then with, as I look back at Gary and Liz, about their support duties, how does that fit in about, I don't know if you guys provide any of that outreach and education yourself?
for them? Or, you know, I mean, how does that all fit in then with the support group?
Yeah, so the field services division is the second largest division within our agency. And so the outreach pertaining to patrol reaching out to the community is all done within the field services division. There is some support that the support services division does for the community outreach, but by and large, it is done within our agency. We do a good job of delegating that out to our individual deputies because we want them to be part of the community. We want them to be known as part of that community policing effort. So also adding the patrol deputy position not only allows that extra sergeant to do some of that support and outreach, but it also allows those deputies to get integrated with the community and make those contacts and do that outreach.
Well, and along with the administrative duties that we would perceive the administrative department conducting goes far beyond even just the community outreach. You know, the implementation of Seaford Campus, I mean, I would perceive that this would be something that the administrative department can oversee to ensure that we don't have anything fall through the cracks on that one. As well as we have, it's a full-time job just trying to stay on top of equipment, troubleshooting, and problems and things because of all the technology we have in our cars. And we fortunately have an IT person available, and then of course we have support from our vendors. But we utilize that administrative person a lot of times to support making those coordinated efforts and trying to do some of that troubleshooting. When it comes to changeover to vehicles, when I have to change over 7 vehicles that were taking all the equipment out of one, putting the other, shuffling cars around, being able to make those decisions as far as equipment needs and everything else, it is a full-time job. And then, you know, just media requests when it comes to subpoenas and coordination of staff. And, I mean, it's just, you know, countless, all of that stuff that has to get done, on top of course, making sure that the GTSD grant is, the paperwork completed there, personnel issues, pursuit use of force reviews, because every time we have somebody that's in a use of force event or in a pursuit, we make sure that supervisors are reviewing those to ensure the policies and procedures are followed. You know, we're always on top of those things, training. There's just numerous things that have to be monitored just within the patrol division.
Thank you.
I have another question, Ms. Scott. Your org chart shows 5 sergeants in field services, and you're referencing 3 of them for patrol. What are the other 2 sergeants?
One is general criminal investigation, and one is the drug screening.
Criminal investigations, so that's in addition to the detectives?
That is the detective.
I show 1 commander, 5 sergeants, 15 deputies, and 3 detectives.
Yes, Kyle Thompson included.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's 4 detectives then. Because what we have general friends, two drug task force from our agency, of course, there's multiple agencies, so our sergeants that oversee the drug task force oversees the other agencies as well within his.
So one sergeant is in criminal as well as.
The deputy rank, yes.
With 3. Kyle Thompson, Matt
Lynn,
and
Jeff
Scott,
yes.
3
deputies and 2 sergeants within.
I'm confused. Let me.
I know, I'm confused too.
Linda, if you allow me, I'll go back through it for you and just kind of run down. So within the patrol division, in investigations, general criminal investigations, we have 1 sergeant and 1 deputy who is an investigator. And then also in our investigations, part of that is our drug task force.
Okay.
And within drug task force, we have 1 sergeant that oversees the whole drug task force. We have 1 certified officer deputy. That also works in the drug task force, and then that sergeant of the drug task force also oversees our deputy who is assigned to the Central Iowa Violent Gang Task Force, the FBI task force down in Des Moines. And so that brings in our 3 deputy rank investigators and the 2 sergeants for the drug task force.
So there are 3 detectives.
Bottom line, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And who's commander? Thank you. So yes, there's some sergeants on your org chart that are not in patrol.
That's correct.
Got two. Okay. I understand now. I was trying to put those two together and it wasn't working. Are there other questions about request for staffing?
Paul, when was the last time you'd asked? I mean, really, for more than one deputy?
For more than one deputy?
You know, at one point.
Yeah. That was the last one we asked for a sworn position was Kyle Thompson when the FBI made their pitch to us. They wanted us to be involved with that.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And then, God, when was the time we asked for a deputy?
We lost. Over the long run, we lost.
When I was elected sheriff, there were 36 sworn in the sheriff's office. Today, and that's counting me back then, today counting me is 31.
Okay. So that's the changeover. You use detention officers versus sworn personnel in the jail.
Yes. And to train, equip, and pay for a detention officer is cheaper for the county.
And that's why they went that route. Mm-hmm. That's the changeover, which was a good...
That was one of the effects. The reason we did that was because we found people that didn't want to be cops. They wanted to be corrections. And then the other side of that was the ones who did want to be cops had to start at the jail, and they were spending maybe 10 years of their career in the jail hoping one day they'd get a chance to go to the road. And so that made them unhappy. Jailers and detention staff.
A while back, sworn officers were used, and you changed those to detention officers. That's why your sworn officers number has gone down.
Yes.
Not because of change in function, but because of change in status.
We changed the status, and then when we would move one out of the jail into patrol, then we started replacing with detention officers. That's one of the things that I had brought to the sheriff's office.
Got it.
John was my first civilian hire at the jail, and he's done well.
Okay. Any other questions of anything? Have we missed something that we should be looking at, asking about?
Well, maybe I should just keep quiet and leave, but we had some things that were highlighted that you guys were looking at maybe cutting. Or you want to go over that, or you just want to do that on your own and let us know what it is?
Well, I think there were a couple large items that we had some concerns on. I'm still, and maybe we need to do that. I will say, I'm still concerned about the care of prisoners not being budgeted higher. And there was an expense.
That's on the revenue.
On the revenue.
Care
yes.
of prisoners.
If you want out that 275, we can. You'll be in a comfort zone. I think it's too high. So, but if you want to do it, we can do it.
I honestly can understand wanting to be cautious. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I'm looking at those numbers, and I can't see 250. Is that okay with everybody?
250? 275. Like you said, I mean, it is a plan. It's not locked in stone there. So, sure, if you want to do it
there's
that
no
way.
There's no penalty for not reaching the revenue.
That's right.
Exactly. I just don't want the county. This is what I look at. I want the county to spend the money.
Sure. Right.
So, we have flexibility that, as was pointed out to me the other day, that our board of supervisors meets weekly, and if there are problems that come up, we're here to be able to deal with them. So it's not like you have one or two chances during, you know, and that's it to say, oh my gosh, this isn't working.
I'm sorry. I'm finished. No, I thought you were finished. So, Connie, was your part of your reasoning for keeping that at 250 is because you
will not have as many prisoners from like Dallas County.
As I sat through previous budget years, even many years out in the audience, I did feel sometimes that the various departments and elected officials were pushed to increase their fees, pushed to increase what they expected their revenue to be. And I felt at times that was much more related so that a board could come back and brag that the balance, they balanced the budget without pulling money from the general, or pulling from the reserve general fund, rather than it being realistic. That, however, was when there were fund balances projected at 31% from the initial projections, et cetera. So I like trying to be realistic. I think $25,000 of this is a, you know, 10%, and it's, maybe it is realistic. We don't know what will happen, you know, but I would hate to start pushing, especially I heard sometimes push for small numbers, $500 and $1,000, and I really did feel it was just to build up what the claim would be out there.
And I've not looked at those really smaller ones. I just see this one is not, it's simply looking at the information we've been provided, right? I think that number's low. It's not with any ulterior motive.
I'm not saying you have an ulterior motive.
And the narrative did say we do not see the inmate numbers diminishing in 21. It may be decreasing out of Dallas, but it may be increasing out of Polk or whatever. And so I guess I think 275 is a more realistic figure.
We're just reestimating 20. That's just your FY 20 though, reestimate. Or are you?
No, that's 21. I'm not suggesting reestimating 20 because I'm going to say for 21 because I'm remembering that they're looking at needing to or hoping to find 138,000, and I suspect that maybe the reestimate timing is in there somewhere. It could be in there somewhere. I'm just looking at 21.
Another thing philosophically, just for me, is that, and I think the sheriff does a really good job of reminding us of this, but for all of the other elected officials, they really have control over their budget. So if we set an amount, then he's going to do his best and the staff's going to do their best to work within that amount. And so back to your question, Paul, about do we work through all of this today or do we remove, you know, do we want to talk? I feel a little more comfortable, even if it's meant another session for us, okay, during callback week when we sat down and talked about what do we want to do about the divide that I referenced at the beginning. As far as do we want to do what some boards have done in the past and said to the sheriff, we need you to cut by 4% or whatever, you guys take care of that and determine your priorities, or to the auditor, determine your priorities. And I don't think we as a board have had that discussion, how we want to hand, if we want to do that kind of by a percentage, by department, or do we want to ask to go line by line? I mean, I express support for the drone, okay, but other than that, the needs have been put out. And for us, it's like, what can we really afford? The staff aside, that's another issue because we have to approve hiring them and all kinds of things. But so I don't know that going through the budget line item by line item gets us practical.
Well, I'm not a fan, just from prior experience, of across-the-board percentage decreases because they hit departments differently.
I was not advocating that. I was saying by department, saying to larger departments, sorry, but we need you to find a percentage here, where a smaller department might be, sorry, we need to find $300. I mean, you know, because we're aware of what there is and predictability. That's just my feeling about how I felt comfortable and in acknowledging that reality.
Yeah, and if I could summarize just what you've
said so far today, and also reiterate what Loris has said about past boards, is a lot of times the elected official, you just said, here's a dollar amount we want you to hit, or here's a percentage.
Mm-hmm.
You also, in your conversation, just so you know, the areas that you talked about were vehicle fuel and maintenance, the sort of hot spots,
mm-hmm.
And then also
education
and training, which had like the $38,200 in miscellaneous, and then also uniform and equipment, which let me see where my math is. I think it's like $15,500 in miscellaneous. So those are sort of the hot spots. I was just taking notes here, which is it's a decision of the board to make. So I just throwing that out there so you have a little bit of the summary of what you had discussed.
The vehicle fuel and maintenance, did you have a number on that?
No, it was just something that it was something where you spent time on that, so I did, yeah. And then, yeah, uniform and equipment, I have $15,500 is just sort of listed as miscellaneous or sort of unnamed cost in that. And then vehicle fuel and maintenance you talked about, and the sheriff also talked about three-year average versus what is presented for FY21, so.
What was the three-year average there? What was the 21 figure?
Three-year average is $165,155.
But the three-year average does not include the MRAP.
So, I'm just giving you a real brief overview here. So, and then they talked about the assumptions for FY21 include $3 a gallon for vehicle fuel. Mm-hmm. And some other additions as well. So.
And what was the figure for 21?
$231,970.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you have something to say?
Yeah, there's some discussion as well that were mentioned, the training, and Lisa, I know you questioned some of the miscellaneous mm-hmm. items, and those are spread out through all of our divisions. And just to make sure that we give you guys a full explanation that we have, Lieutenant Backus is at the table to kind of further explain some of those training.
Some of those, for example, in my division, our Municipal Services Division, we'll put under miscellaneous training going to this conference or this conference or this conference, and if this year I went to this conference, next year someone else might go to another conference. So we call it miscellaneous instead of IACP conference, and then I don't go to the IACP conference, and we have to make it look like it's something it's not. So we use those terms miscellaneous, but also give rationale as to what is included in that. Right? It's not just a wide open thing. It's something that we've done annually that we're just giving ourselves options, because I don't know if the board has to do it. I cannot predict what is going to be important next year or in a year and a half or 2 years. And so we have to have some windows open so that we can say, should we have to do what we have to deal with? The terrorism threat. Last year it was the opioid threat, and a few years ago it was something totally different. We don't know what that is, so we use some of those terms to cover our bases, so we don't have to say we did this, or we're planning to do this, and we're not doing that.
You know, and I have thought about that, but you cannot say every single one because you have other training you're going to send people to. And that's why on that line item, I tend to look more at what's your three-year average, what's your trend. And it's still quite a bit higher than either of those.
I'm sorry. There were a couple of things. The training was put in there for the drones, which is a big expense, and that expense is because there's only one place in the country that can train public safety drone operators to the level we would want our public safety drone operators trained. It's also thousands of dollars because it's out of state, there's per diem, there's hotel, there's the fees associated with that training.
Mm-hmm.
So that's new. We've brought on two new chaplains, which is a big important thing that we recognize as a need. And so there's opportunities, and those are free, the volunteer chaplains, but we train them. We want them to, when we have an incident like we did this week or we did last month with loved ones being hurt, we want to have those people for our staff, for the community, and so we want them trained well. So we've got $1,500 in there that we didn't have last year. So there's lots of things that are out there that that we may not have had in the past that sometimes fall into those miscellaneous headings, sometimes are new in this.
If I can jump in here real quick and just make a comment. Loris, I appreciate the position you were taking here. And what I'm looking at is I'm proud of the sheriff's office. I feel we have a very competent and professional staff. You heard from most of them here today, as you do in all the other budget years. If there's cuts to be made, instead of negotiating with the board line item by line item, what we feel is important to have in our budget, if the board would come back and say, this is how much you have, Sheriff, then I will go back with my staff and we will reduce line items that we need to come in within your figures. But I don't think, not to criticize anybody, but I don't think anybody has the professional training, education, experience that my combined staff does here. Thank you.
Okay. And let me respond to that. I think we can work with that. You know, going through the line item by line item, though, gives us some ideas of where, you know, amounts that we think perhaps can be cut. I agree that professionally you may say, okay, they want me to cut X. I would rather cut it here or there. I think we could better have it cut in another place. No, we don't want to micromanage at the same time where it's our responsibility to take the monies that are going to be available and prioritize and make the best uses of them as can be. But we're not going to say, oh, no, you can't send somebody to that conference. You've got to send somebody to that conference instead or to no conference or whatever. You know, I think we realize that. But we also, you know, so don't worry about it. We're going to say, no, take it out exactly this amount out of here. And these are kind of the things that we're looking at, saying if we think there's, pardon if you don't like it, but a wiggle room kind of.
And I realize it's the first budget year for you guys, so it's kind of new.
It's
experience.
My second, but the first is a blur.
Yep, and Lisa's first. But I guess what I just want the board to understand, and I said this before in other years, and Laura's probably heard this, but I view the contract or the budget as a contract with the board. So there is some wiggle room I have. If I have something that's going to cost $300, well, I may go buy it if I feel it's necessary. But if through this budget process, if we cut out the drone and I have money left over at the end of the year, I'm not just going to go out and buy it because I'm spending it and I have the money to do that. If I get it, it will be because I first come to the board and have this discussion with the board, because I'm not going to spend large amounts of money that we ruled out or was not entered into my budget when we had our work session and it was budgeted. So I think that's one of the relationships I've established with all the boards I have. And I think it is important that you see things that I cut out before it even comes here as an ask, because it gives you the vision or the direction of where I'm taking the sheriff's office and the things we want and we feel that we need. And I appreciate the time here today, and I appreciate the consideration that you've all given to me and my staff and to this budgeting process. Thank you.
I thank you for all the information you provided ahead of time and answering so many questions. When you have a large budget, when you have a lot of items, you're going to have a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. So that's not saying any particular, you know, concerns. It's just there's a lot to digest, and you've done a good job today answering our questions, helping us understand some of the things that we couldn't see right on the documents. So I want to thank you all for your time. And anything else?
Yeah, Sheriff, I just want to say I appreciate that you brought so many folks with the expertise in the particular areas that they came up to the table to answer our questions, versus saying, mm-hmm. you know, I'll have to get back to you on that. That's been very helpful for me. For a first time sitting at this table.
I remember when years ago I'd come home and the kids would come home from school and they'd say, Dad, so-and-so said you were out on Highway 30 to see you giving a ticket to somebody. And, you know, I mean, every time you see a deputy, it's, well, that's Danny's dad or Sarah's dad. But the point is, and that's why I bring my staff, I can't answer all the things down to the minute details that they can, because it's their division, their responsibility. I control the office through a command staff, and that's the way we spread things out, and that's where everybody works. There's, you know, if I did all the jobs, I wouldn't need all these people, and I'd have a bigger race. but I don't. And so I have these people here because they bring the professionalism and the expertise to the sheriff's office.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm just going to say ditto. Okay, to everyone.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Okay. So, kind of we're looking at, we'll get back to you about the percentage.
Okay. Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks
very much.